Join us as we bring you the latest advising updates at Cal State San Bernardino. Each episode is specifically made for you, the CSUSB students and parents. We provide you advising tips, interviews with both CSUSB campus resources and those in academic advising. Sit back and enjoy. Go Yotes!
We want to welcome you all. We know that it's the first week of classes for fall 2020 semester. We are in semester, and we just wanted to welcome all our new students. Thank you for coming to Cal State San Bernardino and joining us. And we also want to welcome our continuing students. Welcome back. We have amazing guests that we will be asking questions. And of course, this will include deadlines. This will include adding courses, waitlisting, and also grad checks. Please help us welcome our special guests from the Office of Registrar, B. Lares and Carlos Ramirez.
B serves as the Assistant Director, and Carlos is a Registration and Information Specialist in the Office of the Registrar, also known as OTR. Both have been on campus for many years and are super knowledgeable in their roles and are looked at as the go-tos for many of the departments on campus. B and Carlos, welcome to the podcast.
Yes.
Hey.
Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning.
So B, let's start with you. Now, you've been on campus, did I read the email correctly, 30 years?
It's more like 35.
35. Wow. Awesome. So you have super knowledge of the campus, processes, and procedures all around campus. And Carlos, you've been on campus not 35 years like B.
Yeah, not 35. Not that experience.
But you've worked on campus for many years and have a really good, really solid knowledge base as well. We're super excited to have you both on the podcast. So let's start with OTR. Office of the Registrar. If a student asked you what the Office of the Registrar is, how would you answer that?
The Office of the Registrar has many services that we offer our students. It is sort of like the heart of the university because everything branches out from the Office of the Registrar. So when students apply to the university, they come in through the admissions office, but eventually they make their way to the Office of the Registrar. This is where their file, their student file, will be maintained. So everything the student needs to do, like register for courses, inquire about repeating a course or discounting a grade, getting Cal State San Bernardino transcripts sent somewhere, getting a pause report, understanding what their major is and what the degree requirements are. Then, in between it all, is the progress to degree, which then leads to graduation, completion of their degree, awarding that degree, and submitting the diploma.
Nice. So in a way, every student will probably be in contact with the Office of the Registrar at some point during their academic journey at CSUSB. And that might be in person when we're back on campus. It might be in an email or phone call regarding registering for a class. It might be submitting a change of major, concurrent enrollment form. It might be submitting a grad check, but your office is a very important part of helping a student from the beginning all the way until graduation.
Yes, definitely. I would like to compare the Office of the Registrar to a central hub of the student's record where a student can go to review, access, change records depending on any service that we might provide. But yeah, as B mentioned, students can do something as an address update with us or, changing their major, asking for one of our most popular ones, which is an enrollment verification for students who are wanting to show proof of enrollment for scholarship reasons to get a good discount from their insurance providers. But yeah, definitely go through admissions first and then they stick with us throughout their whole career. And we're pretty much, again, the archive of all their records.
That is amazing. And thank you so much, B and Carlos, for sharing that with us. You and your team are communicating with students on a daily. With fall classes starting, what should students be aware of, especially with registration and deadlines?
Well, right now, it's about getting the courses that they need, right? So So students right now, the biggest question is, how do I get into a class? It's closed. Will I have an opportunity to get it? What do I need to do? Because we are working remotely, everything, all our services had to convert to an online process. So one of the things that we are very proud of is implementing what we call the permission request service. And basically that is like an add drop slip, but it's online now. And it's called the permission request, or the PR. We like calling it the PR. The students are utilizing the PR to do these requests. So these requests you can do for closed class, a simultaneous enrollment. That's when courses are conflicting with each other because they're scheduled for the same day and time. Course unit overload. We have students who want to take more than the maximum units allowed per term. There's also the swap feature. When they're enrolled in courses and they wish to switch a class for another, it's very important that they do not drop and then go and try to attempt to enroll in another. It's very important that they use the swap feature. And I say that because if the course they're seeking to get is closed or they're unable to get into it, we don't want them to lose their place in the course that they're in now. So it's very important that they use swap. Keep that course in case you don't get the other course, right? So it's important that they remember to use the swap feature. So with all that, the PR allows students to also do a swap. If I can get this course, I will swap it for this other course. So we've made a lot of improvements on the PR process, and I believe Carlos and I are very happy with the functions within PR now. It's been a long road, but I'm pretty proud of it. I don't know, Carlos. I mean, we work with it every day. See it utilized every day, and it's working. Instructors are more likely to look at their requests in a 24/7 period. So I understand that a lot of instructors usually will do all their desk work in the evening. So this helps because, right? Because students can submit requests after normal business hours, and these instructors are still looking at all their requests that are coming in at the end of the day, after their courses, after they've taught courses, is what I meant to say. You know, they're most likely to go on and look at their workload in the evenings. So what I'm finding is that instructors are actually approving these a lot quicker than they were when it was stop by my office and we'll talk about your ad slip. So it's going to be busy and it's going to be crazy, but waitlist is another topic that I want to bring up. Waitlist has an ending period, and that ending period will be Friday, August 28th. And the waitlist period will end on that day. What that means is that if a course is waitlisted and there are students on the waitlist, students will not be able to submit a PR request until after the waitlist ends. So if you're not already on the waitlist, this is what the PR will do for you, is help you submit those permissions. But again, if there are students on the waitlist, it will not allow you to submit until after waitlist ends. So the waitlist engine will run every single night. So if you are on the waitlist, every night the waitlist engine will run and try to enroll students who are, I should say, eligible. Because every now and then we'll have students on the waitlist who aren't eligible for the course. So the waitlist engine will recognize that. And if they are eligible, the engine will go ahead and enroll the student automatically. So if a student is not enrolled by Friday, August 28th, then the student has an opportunity to submit a PR request the following day.
So Carlos, B was mentioning a lot of terms like waitlist, swapping, dropping. Now that we're on semesters, we've received many questions from students about units, and more specifically, how many units can I register for? During the quarter system, the max undergraduate students could take was about 17 units. With the fall semester and from here on out. Has anything changed with the number of units a student can take, especially for undergraduates?
Yes, definitely. It has changed for undergrads now. Their unit cap is 18 semester units. Mm-hmm. And that's across the board, all academic levels. Doesn't change any time of the enrollment period. And for post-baccalaureates, in case we have any post-bacs hearing, it is 15 semester units. So as B mentioned, we do have that permission request, which is awesome, has made everything so accessible and efficient in processing enrollment. There is a specific permission titled unit overload, and that is for the student who wishes to enroll more than the assigned unit cap that they have. But yeah, it has changed.
I just want to clarify, when you say, just in case those who are listening may not be aware of what post-bac means,
can you tell us
about what post-bac means?
Yeah, post-baccalaureate. So these are students who have already graduated from a four-year university and earned a bachelor's. And now coming in to our university, they would be considered our master-seeking students, our credential students as well. And we have our doctoral program, who would be considered the students as post-bacs.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for clarifying. Awesome. And the next question here would be, when students transfer, I know we finished off our orientation sessions. We had a lot of students that were incoming freshmen and also transfer students. So transfer students in the case that they're transferring from another institution, right? So San Bernardino Valley College or any CSU Fullerton or Northridge. But when a student transfers over from another institution, and we've had this question, how long does it take for the courses to update on their pause report?
That's a good question. We are actually getting a lot of calls right now regarding such. Right now, it's pretty hard to determine an exact time frame. The reason being is because it's a peak period for admissions. And how we explain to students, it's somewhat of a two-step process. Admissions is a department that receives the transcripts. They then have to upload it in a shared database that our department uses to retrieve that transcript and be able to see the actual coursework. Whatever time frame that takes from admissions to get the transcript and upload it into that database, we then have our data entry unit. They then enter the coursework into articulates into the pause report. So that whole process from once we're able to access the actual transcript can take up to 2 weeks. But again, right now it's really hard to say. I typically tell students, follow up with admissions, especially if it's been more than a week, to see if they have received their transcript. And again, once it is uploaded and we're able to access it, it will typically take about 2 weeks for us to enter it in their pause report.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So you hear that. Typically takes about 2 weeks. And I guess please bear with us as we're going through this. I know some students have mentioned that there's a Dropbox that they've, dropped off their transcripts to. Please give us some time. As you may know, that we do have staff members that go to the campus to pick those up. And again, as we are virtual and, working from home, that may take some time. So thank you again in advance for students who are listening or going through that process for your patients. We truly appreciate it. And thank you, Carlos, for answering that for us.
No worries.
Now, one question we get a lot as well, especially with Star, who is our undeclared advising coordinator, is change of majors. What is the process with a student changing their major? And also, is there a difference in how a student goes about changing to a non-impacted major versus an impacted major?
I'll let Carlos answer this.
Yeah, there is a difference, definitely. So we have established a process for students to submit a change or major request via their student center. It's a little bit complicated to explain where it's located, but we do have tutorials on our webpage. So for anybody who wants to access any information regarding how to submit either permission requests or change of major, we have tutorials on our webpage. If you just Google search from any search engine, CSUSB, Office of the Registrar tutorials, you should be able to access them. But yeah, the process for a student to change a major, one is impacted versus one that is not impacted, is definitely different. For non-impacted majors and for students who are not seniors or in progress to be a senior, an academic level of a senior, they're able to go into their student center and submit that change of major request. And again, that process is definitely, again, accessible through their student center and pretty efficient. Now, for the impacted majors, they actually have to access a PDF form from our website, which is called an Application for Impacted Majors. We tell them to print it out, fill it out, and scan it over to the department of that major, right? Which right now we have psychology, criminal justice, pre-social work, pre-nursing, and our allied health under the kinesiology department as our impacted majors. So the student would need to obtain department approval from those particular programs, from those particular departments. Once they obtain that approval, if the student is not a senior or in progress to be a senior, they can go ahead and send it over to our evalinfo@csusb.edu email account, which is part of our graduation unit email account. If they are seniors, and this is applicable to all who are wanting to change to impacted or non-impacted majors or in progress to be a senior, they do need to get approval from undergraduate studies. So we do have our change of major form accessible online as well. The student would pretty much do the same process as if it would be an impacted major, print out the form, fill it out. Now, if the major isn't impacted, they could then send it over to undergraduate studies to the ugs@csusb.edu email domain. Once it gets approved, then it gets sent over to us to evalinfo@csusb.edu. Like we mentioned in the beginning, depending on the situation, it could be different routes the student will take. So definitely we would still recommend a student to follow up with us with the Office of the Registrar just to make sure they're doing the ideal process.
And when submitting the change of major, does the Office of Registrar charge a fee?
Currently, we're not charging.
Yes, free. Free is good.
And I'm not too sure when that's going to change, so I would recommend for students to change their major ASAP.
Shout out to all my undeclared students out there listening. And then again, essentially, and Matt knows this, please, if you don't know, as far as, you know, if you're debating between majors, please talk to your advisor. There's a Career Center. Shout out to the Career Center. They have amazing programming coming out, workshops, Zoom workshops. So please make sure you reach out to someone. We'll help you. If not, Carlos had mentioned this on any of your search engines, CSUSB, Office of the Registrar. Their website is amazing and so many things that you could find out, resources and how-to guides, which have been helpful because I've been sending the how-to guide links to students and very helpful. So kudos to you, B, Carlos, and your team. That's been very helpful. So B, if you could tell us a little bit about what a graduation check is and when should students apply or file a graduation check?
So a graduation check, we like calling it a grad check for short. We ask students to file when they're 1 year from completing their degree requirements. So if you're planning to, let's say, graduate fall of 2021, you would want to file that grad check now during the fall 2020 term. Students who are 90 semester units completed or earned, those are the students who are senior students who are eligible to apply. Applying for a grad check is very easy. It's on the My Coyote Student Center. It's under My Academics. You'll find a link there that says apply/view graduation check. That's where students will go to apply. They'll have to validate a few things like their major, their diploma name and address. And then at the end of submitting that, which is like takes a whole minute to apply. After they do that, then they'll be assessed the grad check fee. It is $25 for the grad check and $50 for commencement. So it's a total of $75.
Again, please make sure if you have any questions, you could direct, the answers will be via their website. If not, Carlos have provided here the email information just in case. Me and Carlos, this concludes our interview with you both. We are so appreciative of not only your time, but the information you have shared that we were able to share with students and parents. Shout out for parent to parents who are listening in. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Great interview there from B and Carlos. Thank you so much for joining the podcast and answering those questions. And hopefully we'll have you on for a future podcast, because I'm sure students will have some additional questions that the Office of the Registrar will be able to answer. But just a couple of reminders from that interview. This is the first week of the fall semester. So again, like Star said, welcome to the fall semester to those that are new to Cal State San Bernardino, and welcome back to those that are continuing. And August 28th is the last day to add open classes for the fall semester over your My Coyote account. After that point, you'd have to go through a permission request, also known as a PR, which you'll be able to do through your My Coyote Student Center. And then also on August 28th, the waitlist period ends. So if you refer back to B and Carlos's interview, they have some great information about the waitlist. So up next, we have the Student Assistance in Learning Program.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, we have our special guest from the Student Assistance in Learning CEL program, Kristen Stutz and Victoria Argott. Join us here as we listen in to important information they would like to share with us. And here we go.
First up is Kristen Stutz, who is the director of the Student Assistance in Learning Program, and she has been with the program since 2002. As a CEL counselor for most of those years, Kristen learned so much from her students, including the fact there was very little money management education and support services in K-12 and higher education. Armed with many research questions, Kristen returned to school and recently just graduated with a PhD in personal finance planning from Kansas State University. In her dissertation, she explored student loan decision-making, and she plans on continuing research in college student financial decision-making with the goal of helping CEL and other equity programs offer meaningful personal finance planning education resources and programming. Kristen, hello and welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And we have another special guest, amazing Victoria Argott, who is from the CEL program. So Victoria serves as the counseling supervisor for Student Assistance in Learning CEL program. She recently celebrated her fifth anniversary with CEL. Victoria is proud to work with the CEL program and its students. Being a first-generation college student herself, she can relate to first-generation student population. Victoria is an alum from CSUSB, graduating as a dual major in psychology and human development. As a CEL counselor, she knows her experiences does not represent the collective experience of all first-generation students. She believes that all her students hold a unique story. She always is eager to listen with both empathy and respect, honoring their space and individual voice. Her mission is for her students to wholeheartedly know that they are not alone in their college journey. Welcome, Victoria, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Star and Matt. I'm really excited to be here today.
And this is going to be fun because Star also used to work for CEL.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Shout out to my CEL family. I not only used to work for CEL, but I am a CEL alumni. So I am just so honored and blessed that I get to and have worked with both of Kristen and Victoria. So CEL is near and dear to my heart.
So let's jump right in. So Kristen, let's start with you. For those who don't know, and especially like, let's say a student comes up and asks, hey, what is a CEL program? How would you describe that to a student or a parent?
When we describe the CEL program, like at orientation and things like that, a lot of times we give the analogy that CEL is like perhaps AVID, you know, if they're coming out of high school to kind of, you know, describe what we do and give them something to kind of anchor our services on. CEL is a TRIO program, and TRIO programs are a family of federally funded programs that serve first generation students, low income students, and students with disabilities. And it's a pipeline that starts in middle school and goes through graduate school. And CEL is CSUSB's Student Support Services Project, which is the TRIO name at CSUSB, and we serve undergraduate students. And so we're we'd like to be a home base for our students. That's what I always tell students as well. So we provide wraparound services. Every student is assigned a sale counselor. Victoria is one of them, Marina's the other. And that is their key person in sale. And we work with students to achieve whatever it is that they want to do. Like in Victoria's bio, I loved it. She talked about the unique stories, and they have unique goals and dreams. And so we're lucky enough to have the time to work intensively with them to help support them on that journey. And so we have, I'll break up our services and we'll probably pepper them in as we go along, but into two main camps. We have our academic support services, and that's typically, we have two staff members that do academic coaching, one focusing on STEM and one focusing on general and writing. And then we also just recently, and we partnered with tutor.com so that we could offer virtual tutoring 24/7. So we make that available to our students. So that's, and then we do a lot of workshops and writing labs and things like that for students on the academic side. And then Victoria and Marina are in charge of our counseling and guidance services, which encompass a lot of different things. Probably what you do the most is academic, intensive academic planning, graduate school planning, academic advising, but career counseling, personal counseling, many more.
And Victoria, I know that Kristen had covered some of the resources, you know, academic counseling and all of that. Can you elaborate a little bit more about on that as far as the type of resources that the SOAP program offers to students?
One that I would like to add is also graduate school preparation. Yes, because for us, when we work with a student, we really, like Kristen said, it's very wraparound, very holistic, thinking about the student and what their needs are. So in our first meeting, a lot of times when I'm meeting a new student, one of the first questions I ask is, aside from their name, of course, is what they hope to do after they graduate from CSUSB. Because for me, I like to see the big picture, right? Like, if we know what your end goal is, then we know what steps to take, what experiences you need, that we need to connect you with so that you can be prepared to pursue those goals. So if you're wanting to, you know, later on go into an MFT field, what experiences can you do now as an undergrad to help you prepare for that career? So even when we're selecting, if I use that same example, a psych student who's wanting to pursue that career path, you know, then we make suggestions of electives that they can take that can serve as a good platform for the graduate program that they're wanting to pursue. Having them be involved in research, you know, perhaps working with a community program that's going to serve a population that's similar to the population they're going to want to work with once they're in that career field. So it's very much thinking about what their end goals are and then doing all those pieces now as an undergrad to have them be prepared to move on to that goal. So also career planning, right? Because it's a lot of times it is interwoven, right? A graduate school and career. So again, just thinking about what their goals are, their aspirations, and really also helping them to, as of right now, you know, as students are learning remotely, there's also a lot of challenges that they're facing, right? And, you know, we try to think of ways in which we can support them, hear their feedback, and come in and really help them. I know some students have expressed just the stress and anxiety that comes of just, you know, working at home, and what can we do? And we try to do workshops to help them, you know, do time management, things to prepare as you're doing online courses. That's something we did almost immediately as we moved, you know, to online learning. Our counseling intern, Cynthia, put together a great presentation for them to know, hey, how do you, you know, access Blackboard? How do you, you know, use the functions within Blackboard to keep on top of your studies. So just thinking about the things that they need. And sometimes it might be things that they don't express, but we really like, okay, let's show it to them. And then they're like, oh, I didn't think I need this, but I'm glad you guys offered it. You know, we try to be as proactive as we can as well to really, you know, give them as a comprehensive, you know, support as we can.
So now that students know about a lot of the different resources and how great the SAIL program is, the question that's going to come up now is, well, what are the eligibility requirements for the program? And an even bigger question is, can I still apply for the program?
So as I mentioned, you know, as a TRIO program, our federal funding mandate is that we serve students that are either, so they just have to be one of the three that I'm going to mention, either a first generation college student, and our definition is that neither parent or caregiver has a bachelor's degree. So if they have an associate's degree or some college, they're still considered a first gen, according to our definition. So either a first gen student, and the vast majority of our students are first gen, and we're really proud of that. And that's the probably the main way that students join SAIL is through first gen status, and then also or be a low income student. So basically what that means is that it's a little bit complicated, but if a student is not a first generation college student, we have federal income guidelines that we can, you know, look to see if we can classify them as low income, and then that can qualify them for the program. Or the third qualifier is be a college student with a disability. So as long as they meet one of the three, they're able to join SAIL, and we're first come, first serve. We're funded to serve 335 students, but we serve definitely more than that. And when we have openings, we have a wait list. And if a student's eligible, we contact them, and it's first come, first serve. And we will be admitting students in the spring semester. I have to get used to saying that. The spring semester. We just had our orientation yesterday. We think we are full for the fall, but don't hesitate. We tell students, don't hesitate to get on our interest list, because if we see that there's a space, we're going to keep going down the list, and we will stay in touch with you to keep, you know, let students know their status.
Yeah. So, and that's great to know that you guys have an interest list. So even though, you know, the program will not be accepting any students, you know, based on the numbers now, that there's an interest list for students who may be interested in joining. That's awesome. So I know that we are within the fall semester. Everything is going virtually for now. But what advice do you have for students taking courses virtually? Or another way to ask is, what challenges have some of your students expressed, and are there avenues that SAIL or CSUSB can help?
I'll say the challenges have been many and in a large spectrum. I've had students that have to, have shifted a lot of pieces in their personal life. They might have been affected directly from COVID. They had a family member who was sick. Their work schedule has intensified because they are an essential worker. I've had students who have lost, unfortunately, employment because of COVID. There are students who just have difficulty accessing some of those basic pieces that they need, like a computer. What we try to do is do as much as we can to be knowledgeable about the resources in campus or even outside, and having them connect with those services to try to get as much as they can. Letting them know about the laptop lending program, letting them know about the basic needs program, the DEN, because just basic needs that they need covered so that they can be in the best space to be successful. For us in SAIL, connecting them with tutor.com, that is a service that is operated by Princeton Review. So they are tutors that are vetted and are really good, and the offering of tutoring subjects is very vast. So luckily, that's one piece that our students have really benefited from, doing tutorials on just how to use Blackboard, because there were a lot of students that weren't as familiar, again, because we were in person and a lot of instructors, complete their courses in what we think traditionally. And now this forced a lot of students to move online. And a lot of students have had challenges just juggling the new format. not being as familiar with using a laptop daily to do all their assignments. So that has also been, you know, another piece that students have struggled. But I think the biggest advice for those students is just knowing that, you know, there's SAIL, but there's also so many programs out there willing to help them. They just need to not be afraid to ask those questions and reach out for that support, because there's so much faculty wanting to be of support and help their students. There's advisors like you, you know, Star and Matt, you know, and other offices, and just knowing that there's a wealth of people wanting them to be successful, you know, and that they just need to ask and we'll be there, you know, to support them in any way we can. And I know there's a lot of offices doing such great work, like the Office of the Registrar, that, you know, that was a tough job changing a lot of processes online, but the campus is really moving forward, doing as much as they can. So knowing that, to not be afraid to reach out to someone. If that person doesn't know directly, don't worry. They will connect you with that person you need. So even don't feel like, oh, I have to not, I don't even know who to contact, so I'm not going to contact anybody. Just try someone and trust me, they are so wonderful and kind. They will direct you to where you need to go. You know, so just not being afraid to ask for that support, because people are there to support you. I would say that's the biggest, and, you know, for sure.
And so even anyone that's starting, any student that's starting out that might be nervous, it's like, hey, there's a lot of resources that whether it's SAIL or CSUSB as a whole is offering. And a lot of times students can go to the CSUSB homepage and then click on the virtual learning link that's at the top there. And then on that page, there's a long list of different resources that are available for students. So the flip side of that question would be, if we have students that have had some challenges and there's definitely help for them, have any of your students expressed successes that they've had taking online classes?
I would say most certainly there have been. There's students that of mine. So I had students that would struggle finding classes because they would work traditionally 7-to-5 job. Now that we moved online, they're like, oh, I'm loving it. You know, I'm actually taking on more classes because I like this online format. I feel I'm more balanced, you know, whereas before I was working and then having to physically be on campus. Now they're finding, actually, there's quite a few that have expressed that they've liked that format. And I've been seeing it with those students that really were working those 40-hour, you know, a week job. So I know that there's been a lot of successes there. And those students in that instance where going to have their graduation delay a little bit just because of how much they can take on. But now they're like, hey, this format's working for me. I'm taking a few extra courses. So they're actually, this has put them a little bit on track to be graduating on time. So I have seen that too, which is, you know, I was like, hey, I'm happy for them that, you know, there's, in, you know, within everything there, we're trying to do our best and find, you know, what's good. But I would say that would be one success. I know for those students that this has been a good, a good platform. Yeah.
That's so cool. And that's great. Great to know, you know, that there are students that are successfully going through this, the change, and then just catching on and finishing successfully. That's awesome. So I know, you know, in talking about online courses and taking online courses, I know the system we use is Blackboard, right? For students, especially those starting out, they may have heard the term synchronous and asynchronous. Can you explain to us, when you explain this to your students or to students in general, what would be a way that you would let students know as far as the term synchronous and asynchronous? And Kristen?
Absolutely. I think that these terms, as we all know, are being thrown around in our new normal, and it can be get really confusing too, because they're so similar, kind of along the same lines as subsidized, unsubsidized, right? With student loans. But a synchronous course is one, or the synchronous part of a course. Some courses can be both, have both elements, but the synchronous element of a course is the live portion. So it's happening in real time. So perhaps your faculty member has scheduled a live class via Zoom at a certain time during the week. And so that would be the synchronous portion, where the asynchronous portion would be the portion of the course that you don't have to attend it at a certain time or in a live format. So perhaps you're watching a recording of a lecture or you're going through the modules. And so, yes, some courses are all synchronous, all asynchronous, or a combination of the two.
And as we wrap up this interview, I mean, you've given a lot of great information, a lot of great tips. How can, if a student has a question, like an incoming student or someone that's continuing that wants to join SAIL, or even for those that are in the SAIL program right now, how would they get in contact with the SAIL program? Can you give us some information about where they can email, call, or maybe find you on social media?
I'll start with our office contacts, and then our director of social media, aka Victoria Argott, can add the the social media piece. Right now, probably the best way to contact SAIL would be to email us at sail@csusb.edu. That email goes to various people. And since, you know, we're all, you know, home offering all of our services virtually, that gets to a person pretty quickly. And then they can decide, you know, who needs to respond and who's the best person to respond, given the inquiry. We also are answering our phone live. But because it's linked through the internet, it's not always as reliable as email, right? If you need someone right away, that's another good place to go. And our phone number is 909-537-5921. But I would suggest the email, because I think that'll get you a faster response sometimes.
So as far as social media this summer, hey, you know, we're taking a little bit of a break, but we're coming back full force this week. We're doing a lot of staff introduction videos because, again, we want to make sure students get to know all of our staff members, what they do, how they can receive support. So that's coming up soon in our social media. Again, we're trying to use our platforms as best as we can to have students still remain connected with us and know that we're here to support them. Our handles recently changed. So now for Facebook and Instagram, the handle is the same, which is at sail.trio.csusb. And part of it is that we wanted to make sure that if others are searching us, they can know that we're still associated with TRIO, which is cool. And we have a lot of TRIO programs in the community here in Northern California. So I know they sometimes refer their students once they are admitted to CSUSB. So having them connect with us. But also our website is another resource, which is csusb.edu/sail. That is our website that is available. And we also are doing more to build our YouTube channel as well. We're going to have a lot of more how-to tutorial videos for our students. So how to access our SAIL organization page, how to set up an appointment with your SAIL counselor, how to complete your contacts with the SAIL program. So we're going to have a lot more of that information available on YouTube. So just doing our best to utilize the great resources that are out there so that, again, we can just build that connection with our students. And that's one of the awesome things that have come from, you know, working remotely, us, you know, trying to build more of those systems in so that students definitely have that information at their disposal. But like I said, this week we're coming back full force. Yes.
And you guys are amazing. So, I mean, we're taking notes over here from our end. Thank you so much. That basically concludes our session with you both, Victoria and Kristen. It's been a pleasure having you here with us. And not only that, but sharing this information for students. Shout out to our students listening, to our SAIL students. Also parents, shout out to the parents listening and everyone out there. Again, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Another fantastic interview there with the SAIL program. Thanks again for Kristen and Victoria for joining us on the podcast. And just a little update for the SAIL program. They wanted us to let you know as students that because SAIL is a federally funded program, students must either be a first-generation college student, a low-income college student, or a college student with a disability, and be a U.S. citizen or permanent resident. Students can know if they meet this criteria, if they are eligible to receive federal student financial aid, such as a Pell Grant and or direct student loans. So if you have a question about your potential eligibility for SAIL, they welcome you to contact them directly, and they'll help you determine if you meet the criteria. But Star, we're at the end of episode 2 of the podcast, but we have episode 3 coming up.
Yes, we do, Matt. We are so excited as we team up with our College of Natural Sciences advisor and special guest. You don't want to miss out on this information about majors, information about College of Natural Sciences. So please join us. Matt, we're excited. That's coming soon.
Definitely. And so that'll be coming out in September, and that'll be Monday, September 14th. And then we also have our fourth episode that'll be coming up on September 28th. So two episodes in September. We're super excited. We're hoping that you're enjoying the podcast. So don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Google, or Stitcher. You can also find our episodes on the homepage of the CSUSB advising website, csusb.edu/advising. Thanks again for joining us on episode 2. We look forward to seeing you on episode 3. See you in September.
See you all soon. Bye.